In the hopes of staying on time, I'd like to convene the Customer Service and Operations Committee meeting. I would ask for an approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Motion made and seconded for approval of the agenda. Mr. Giancola?
Yes, I'm also substituting for Mr. Tupka.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. I would also ask for approval of the minutes of the meeting of December the 6th. So, moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Thank you. We have three information items to cover today. The Vital Signs Quarterly Report, the Silver Line Bus Service Plan, and the upcoming rail service schedule for State of Good Repair work. And I'd like to ask that we hold our questions until after each of the presentations is made. Because of our full agenda last month, I asked Andrea to come before us this month with the KPI report, and as a result, the written materials you've received are a little out of cycle, but I believe that Andrea is prepared to verbally provide the latest indicator information that's available. I'd also like to welcome Lee Gray Richmond from Bus Operations Communication Center, who is joining Andrea today to give us some insight on how the vital signs information is being put to practical use day to day. So, with that.
Good morning, Chairman Downs, the members of the committee and the board. As you said, I'm here today to share the quarterly results of Metro's performance for the third quarter of calendar year 2012. And you all, I believe, received a copy of this via email about approximately 5 weeks ago. So, and we also put it up on the WMATA.com scorecard at that same time in order to kind of put it out in a timely manner. And as you noted, during the 5 weeks, we have some more updated performance information, so I'll sprinkle that in here as I talk about our results. And actually, next month, in February, I'll be back in front of the committee to talk about a look back on progress and results for the full calendar year 2012 as compared to 2011. So we have another opportunity to go over the results in short order here. So every quarter, as the Chief Performance Officer, I get to come before you and share how Metro's performing and the actions that many of our operations folks are taking to move the indicator needles in the right direction. And today I thought I'd try something a little different. So this presentation is going to have two parts. In the beginning, I'll talk about the results. But I also thought you would find it interesting to hear from a staff person kind of on the front lines of our operations in bus, working in Jack Weepa's group. And she's going to talk a little bit about what she's doing to move the needle on bus safety performance. So the second part of the presentation, as you noted, will be delivered by Ms. Leah Gray Richmond. She's an accident analyst and team member in the Bus Operation Communication Center, and she's going to talk a little bit more about her role when I turn it over to her in a second. But let me turn back to the third quarter and beyond results. And you can see up there that we have kind of three key messages. I think you all liked this approach of talking about, like, what were the key messages out of all the different performance results. And those are that the increased focus on performance targets is driving collaboration in the organization, and I'll give you some examples of what that means. That better communications is improving our customer experience, and that data is increasingly being used to prioritize work. So back on the first message of focus on performance targets driving collaboration within the organization, an example of that is you can see in the Transit Infrastructure and Engineering Services Group, also known by our acronym TIES, very focused on rail on-time performance. And as an example of that, rail operations and maintenance is cooperating to ensure correct car placement at the beginning of the start of daily service. With this active management of on-time performance, which also includes improved rail car availability, which I'll talk about shortly, fewer delays and limited weekday track work, for the quarter we achieved an average of 91.7% on-time performance, which exceeds our target of just above 90%, and our performance for the same period in 2011. As we look forward to October and November, in each of those months, we achieved 91.7% on-time performance, so we're again above our target. And as Mr. Starles noted, we are increasing our target for the next calendar year. Also on the note of collaboration for the third quarter, rail fleet reliability improved over the same time last year by 10%. We had improved rail car availability, reduced delays, and engineering helping the car maintenance folks come up with better maintenance procedures to address persistent problems like doors. And this is the really exciting note. Looking ahead to the data for October and November, we're seeing some super dramatic improvement results. And next month, when I show you the trend lines as part of the annual lookback, you'll see that the mean distance between delays trend chart makes a huge kind of off the charts climb upward for rail cars. Compared to last year, rail car reliability improved by over 50% in October, and cars traveled about twice as far without delay in the month of November. This dramatic improvement was mainly due to successful implementation of the door fix on the 2000, 3000, and 6000 series rail cars. This has a direct positive customer impact. Fewer door delays means more reliable and on-time service. So we look forward to that continuation of improved performance. Looking at elevator escalator, again on the note of collaboration, elevator escalator and the chief engineer infrastructure group are working very collaboratively together to resolve water intrusion problems in our elevator escalator system. System-wide escalator availability for the quarter was 7% better than last year, and it continued to improve as unscheduled outages were reduced. That positive trend continues in the months of October and November. Increased collaboration amongst bus schedulers, operators, and customers to develop service changes contributed to on-time performance on the bus side. As Mr. Starles noted, we're not quite reaching our target of 78%, but the good news is that looking at the average of the quarter of 76.2% is a 2% gain over last year, so we're doing better than last year. We're not quite at target. And that positive trend continues as compared to last year for October and November for bus on-time performance. For better communications, improves customer experience. Riders are getting better information and assistance from our operators, and we see that as we look at customer accommodations up for the quarter across the board for bus, rail, and metro access under the category of professional and courteous. Overall, we saw a 27% increase over last year in commendations. This was tempered by more complaints, and those are which we would typically see when we do schedule changes. So we saw complaints related to schedule changes for bus and rail. And we are making a lot of efforts to remind customers to remain alert to their personal safety, and people appreciate that when we receive commendations about that. On the final message of data is increasingly used to prioritize work. Elevator escalator folks are monitoring availability trends, and we talked to you before about the reorganization of that group into escalator maintenance teams, geographic teams, and they're focusing their resources on stations with the lowest availability, and that's showing up in the improved performance. And then finally, Chief Taborn went into some detail about the crime rate. The Metro MTPD is deploying officers to the highest crime stations and bus routes. They look at the crime stats every month and the areas where they're experiencing crime through the Metro Stat meeting, which you may be familiar with. And over the summer months, which is the subject of this report, they emphasized areas that juveniles were using, and as a result, we're able to drive serious crime for June to August down 5% below the 2011 number. So on the note of using data to prioritize work and drive performance, I'd now like to ask Ms. Gray Richmond to share with you how BUS is using data to keep safety first.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for letting me be a part of this today. I'm just going to take a few minutes of your time. I am the acting accident analyst for BOCC, and I enjoy it. I began this role in June of 2012. I became the DriveCam temporary manager in August of 2012. When I'm gathering the data for accidents, BOCC records the accidents, and I'm pulling that information directly from Maximus to make it as accurate as possible as to the time, day of the week, how many people were involved, and our bus that was involved. when we have accidents, of course, no operator leaves the division and says, I'm going to go have an accident today. They don't want to. We don't want to inconvenience our passengers as well as the operators want to go home on time. But when we do, I gather the information and I use about four. Four is the number for any, four accidents on any corridor is considered a hot spot. It warrants the attention of the service operation managers as well as the superintendents. When we do this, we can improve our visibility. Maybe, you know, it's just by slowing down a little or having operators feel safe that they can make it through the corridor without having cars parked where our bus stops are. So we're making great efforts. Also, I need to thank Montgomery County and DC. We've had some fixed object accidents along our routes on the 64 and the J line. And I sent a simple message asking Public Works to trim the trees back or to fill a pothole, and it was done in less than 3 days. For DC, we had some Jersey walls that were affecting our 64 route. Our buses couldn't make the right turn without hitting that Jersey wall, and it was just a gentle scrape, but it's still an accident. They moved the Jersey wall back so we can make that turn safely as well. So with the information I gather, talking to the jurisdictions, we're able to reduce accidents, just, you know, small margins, but they make a difference. They really make a difference. When we're looking at our hot spots, some corridors remain month to month, but eventually they drop off because our service managers do get out there. Our operators are being more aware. I post the accidents weekly on the Bus News Network, and that's in every division, so they can see how many accidents they had the week before. And most bring them down. Some divisions have zero accidents, and they get a big, beautiful bubble that says, you did great, no accidents last week. So it's encouragement at a distance. It's encouragement at safety meetings and just encouragement from their superintendents to reduce the accidents. We're going to have them, but not as many and not as severe. In 2013, we have some other efforts in place. Keep It Green began on October 1st, and those incentives will be given out beginning Monday. We have blankets and lunch totes, patches, pins, and lapel pins for the operators, just to say when they make it to the station and that light is green on drive cam, they get an incentive. It's to say thank you. They've done a safe job, they've moved their customers safely, and we want to show that we appreciate them.
So that means the drive cam was not activated during your whole trip?
Exactly, exactly. And when I say we're moving on to drive cam now, when we say that they're keeping it green, a round trip can take anywhere from 45 to 50 minutes. So those operators will get their incentive, and the operators will have a trip that's 50 minutes or more in one direction, they will also get an incentive. And it's on all shifts, early straights, middays, and late straights will be included. When we're looking at TriCam, this was introduced to the authority in 2010. It is a training tool to help us so we can see what are we doing or what can we do a little bit better to improve how we move along our routes. And it's something as small as the talks don't take long. If an operator has a triggered event, they're called into the office for less than 5 minutes of talk time and coaching time with an office manager to say, let's try to improve and do this a little bit better next time so you don't have it. Not necessarily being browbeaten, just to bring it to their attention so they'll know what's going on. And finally, with DriveCam, I just wanted to read this because I believe in Metro's mission. I became a part of this company because I enjoy it, and I support operators because I respect them. Metro's mission is to lead the region forward by providing safe, reliable, equitable, and cost-effective transit, using data to guide management decisions that reduce accidents and effectively coach operators will improve the safety of our patrons and increase our reliability for the riding public. I thank you.
Actually, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Giancola?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the reports. I have a couple questions on some of the charts. On bus on-time performance, could you bring that up? Page 19 of 78 or number 7, it says here. Well, that I'm not sure. All right, you don't have it on the chart? Okay. It shows for 2 years, in the August to September time frame, going from our best bus on-time performance to our worst for 2 years in a row. And it would be interesting to know whether it's been a consistent thing over more than 2 years. So what's happening in August or September that's causing that highest to the worst? And two, you know, what can we do to address that? And, you know, is it because there are people on leave, we don't have enough supervisors out there watching, or, you know, what is it?
September, everybody comes back to school, everybody comes back to the Capitol, everything changes in September. People have new routes that they're using, individuals to get to and from, and we just have to go through that adjustment every September. We make attempts to prepare operators for such activities, but it is a challenging month, and August, of course, is a month when most people are on vacation, there's less traffic, and things usually are better.
Okay. Second question on employee injury rates. There's a chart, and, well, page 27 of 78, or number 15, depending on how you're... We've had this a report before, but when you do your annual report, Andrea, I would be interested in seeing each of the various divisions of WMATA and how they're broken out in the rates, not only for the year that we've just completed, but comparative to previous years, maybe two or three years back, to see whether we're seeing improvements in some versus others and such. So I know in the past we've seen those charts where you've broken it out by division, so I'd like to see that in a future report.
Mr. Downey?
I have one other request relating to what I said earlier about my magnifying glass. Some of these charts, and especially where the goal is to improve by a tenth of a percent, might be rescaled so you could actually see the difference, but you don't have one year just totally laying on top of the other. It's just a suggestion.
Ms. Porter?
Well, first of all, I want to thank both of you for a very interesting presentation, and particularly Ms. Gray Richmond. I found this very interesting in terms of how you use the data. I have one follow-up, and this is probably my own ignorance about how the drive cam works. You talk about keeping it green. What triggers a red drive cam? Would it be an accident, or is it an abrupt stop, or something else?
Ms. Porter, you're right on target. It could be an accident depending on what the force was that made. There has to be a force over a certain G. But the slamming on brakes, that's definitely a trigger. Definitely a trigger. A bump from the side of the bus, if it's enough to rock the bus, just again, the right amount of G forces, it's going to trigger. The operator also has the option to do a manual trigger. There's a button right by their elbow that they can do a manual trigger for something that may be going on inside the bus or something that may be happening in front of the bus, so we can get many, many triggers.
So when you want them to keep it green, it's you want to avoid any of those things which are unusual or potentially hazardous to the bus.
Exactly. And mainly it's slamming on brakes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
If I could add, I think my understanding is in this Keep It Green program that over a 60-day period, we had 400 operators that had no red lights at all during that period. And that's pretty exceptional considering the traffic conditions that folks have to work their way through. So,
Mr. Barnes?
Thank you. I want to also thank you for the presentation. This is very, very good information. I wanted to go back to something that Chief Caborn said earlier, and he said that being a bus operator is maybe the toughest job in the whole system. And I would suggest to our friends in the media that an interesting thing to do would be something that some of us on the board have done, which is go drive the simulator where you try to drive a bus. And fortunately, they didn't put me in a real bus because I caused several accidents quickly in the 10 or 15 minutes I was in that simulator. It is very difficult to operate one of these big systems, even when you don't have other traffic and snow and ice or all the other conditions that the bus operators face. I've driven a lot. I've driven trucks, and when I was in the Marine Corps, I drove some strange vehicles, but they were not as difficult to operate as these big buses that our bus operators are driving around this region every day. And it was fascinating to me just to see how hard it is. I think it would be fascinating to most people to see how difficult it is, and they'd have more respect for our bus operators if they understood how difficult it is to maneuver that huge vehicle through our very congested streets here in the Washington region.
Any other
questions or comments? I want to, again, thank the general manager. I don't want this to become repetitive, but there's a saying in the business community that if you don't count it, it doesn't count. And Rich's, the general manager's focus on performance data helps everybody be accountable for specific performance. And one of the things that I would suggest is that while this is a very powerful management tool, it's also a tool for telling the public what's happening with the system. And I've just a couple of the things that I pulled out of this third quarter report were bus on-time performance is above last year. Bus fleet reliability is above last year. Rail on-time performance was better than last year. Rail fleet reliability is better than last year. And escalator system availability was 7% better than last year and only slightly below the 89% goal. We need to tell our own story, and I'd encourage you to think of this not only as a management tool, but a media tool to be able to both explain where we've had victories and where we had some targets that we perhaps fell short on, but what we're doing about it, to place this on the WMATA site, our website, in plain, understandable customer language, and then to do a quarterly and annual performance press release that, after the board's had a chance to digest it, has the public be part of the information sharing as well, because I think there's good news here, and it also leads to better recognition for employees who are helping deliver this performance, and there's no downside to having this also be in a media context going forward. But congratulations. I think there's an awful lot of good news here.
It could be as simple as a red, yellow, green scorecard. Just get to green is what we're trying to do.
Get to green. All green.
We do have a scorecard up on WMATA.com, and we can take a look at it if it's a little convoluted or something.
Well, it's technical. I mean, if it's plain language, customer-oriented language, it would be more easily digested, I think. I know it's there. I know the data is there, and it's there in the context that management uses it, but it's a good story. So congratulations to everybody. We have the revised rail service plan for the Silver Line, and the rail service, Silver Line bus service. And Jim Hughes. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Mr. Chairman, last month you were briefed on the rail service plan, so I want to give you a status on where we are on the bus side getting ready for the Silver Line. The bus planning effort's been going on for about a year and a half now. We've involved all the local carriers, we've involved the county staff. We've incorporated working with them. Each of the county has a long-range plan. We incorporated most of those goals in the plan, considering the Silver Line coming to quite some time. As a result of all those efforts, we're about 90% of the way we want to be. There's still some efforts that are going on, but it's too bound to move forward. This plan is going to have a complement of Silver Line, so we open it. All the bus services, the details are out there. Complement the bus Silver Line when it opens, as well as provide local services in the area. We are going to doing things in terms of the plan about looking at running time, improving the reliability, making sure that the buses can get in and out of stations that we're coming. And as a result of it, we're looking at the overall ridership of how to serve the region that the Silver Line is going to expand into. A little bit about the existing service. Currently in the area where this is going to provide replacements in the Reston area, there's about 60 bus routes, about change, you know, we eliminated sort of the 11 new routes that are out there, and we'll go through all the details about which ones are modified. Next slide shows you which ones are done by carrier. I mentioned there's 5 carriers out here. When we're done with all of this changes, each of the train stations will have new services. Additional shuttle services are provided to each of the places in the area to get into it. As you probably know, the Tyson stations are built for, with parking garages, they're built for access in and out of buses, so this is shuttle service primarily provided by Fairfax County, but again, this is an integrated plan, so we're going all of the customers, all of the services out there. There are new service areas that are going to be provided in and around, primarily Tyson, to explain a little bit of the rest of the area. There are some routes that we operate today that are being eliminated as part of the plan. But as they're being eliminated, there's being sort of new routes put in their place. Duplicated services are being eliminated, new routes. Everybody gets service, no one's losing service in this plan, it's really service advantage. Throughout the planning of this program line development, we've been concerned about the reduction of some of the blue line service. We've heard about this in the past, and we continue to hear about it. As a result of those concerns, we've been able to extend some of our Metro bus services and enhance some of the other services to give people a choice. So this chart shows the services that we've extended, the top part of it is the Metro bus service that we've sort of extended from trips that operate in Virginia, often go to Roslyn or go to the Pentagon. We've extended them downtown. These people are part of it. You take the bus to train and you can stay on the bus and on it. Some of these have been more successful than others. We continue to keep some of them. In addition, Arlington County has enhanced some of their bus service. The bottom half of the chart is their art service. So there is some expanded service that gives some people some alternative in terms of whether they take the bus to the final destination or they transfer to a bus. All of the changes on this slide have already been implemented over the past almost 2 years, some of them. One of them a little bit longer. The next slide shows additional services out there, the sort of cross county service that lets people come from the south side of the county to the north side of the county. And these are all existing services, both metro service and art services, county services, that gives people this alternative that we've got out there for the blue line. Next slide. The plan we've got is almost complete. I mentioned that in the beginning. We've actually got a wrap-up meeting with all the carriers at the end of this month. We think we're sort of there. We are still seeking additional input, both the Arlington County, Fairfax County, Arlington County, Prince William County, and all the Metro are having a series of public input meetings. Some of them are established, some of them aren't. But we think our plan is almost there. We just need some feedback for that. When we're complete with all this in the next few months, we think we'll have an integrated plan, what carriers are doing, what we're doing, the customer communication plan that will come out later this year is going to have it as one plan. This is what everybody's doing. I live here, here's my bus service to get there. Fairfax plan, Sunderland, Metro plan, and how we build the meetings, coordinate meetings, as well as public meetings. So I think overall, we'll have a good plan for the silver line. We'll be serving the market. We'll be improving our reliability on the service out there. And I also think that doing this from a metro perspective, that we can also cost the metro. From a bus perspective, so the rail car, we kind of integrated so that we need any increase to the bus stop. So that's where we are. We're pretty far along with this plan. A little bit of ways to go, maybe some speaking to get the final comments from the public, but it's time to address you as you've heard where we are from the budget and what's next. That concludes my presentation.
Questions? Mr. Bolger?
Congratulations on serving as a regional ringleader, which we sorely need around this metropolitan area. But I just had one question that just helped me understand. Where does Prince William County fit into this integrated process that you're discussing?
Prince William runs new service into the metro system. Presently, they bring into West Falls Church.
Oh.
And they have some other services that serve Tyson. So what we've done is expand service or not conserve. The service from the 66 isn't going to go to West Falls Church. It's going to go and serve Tyson. It serves both of their markets will serve the train station, so they can get up wherever they want downtown, wherever they want on Metro, will also serve Tyson Center. So they're going to shift their terminus. The Mountain County Service does a similar, it comes into West Polster, they're going to go to Wheeling. Similarly, to the airport service, it serves West Polster, it serves other Wheeling. So the services continue just to be part of the railroad.
Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I thank you very much, Mr. Hughes, for the presentation. And I think the other part that because of the various jurisdictions, this plan works well in terms of integrating all of the systems. And when you look at some of the others, I think another piece that's not mentioned is the hot lane piece that moves actually almost picking the folks up from Prince William and picking up from the VRE and coming into Tyson's. Those are long hauls for people, but they're not driving, and that's the incentive that we're offering, that what are the opportunities to keep people from driving to the stations. Particularly the further out folks are given as much of an incentive to be able to take some sort of transport from their county to come into the station areas rather than to drive into the station areas. And then I think the other aspect of it is that the internal services are going to provide greater internal bus service to the rail stations in communities so that they are not becoming drivers. I think the incentive has to be what are the first initiatives we can give people to take transit first versus drive and learn the system. So getting the services in place as soon as possible has been the goal. Mm-hmm.
Other comments or questions? Yes. Ms. Hines.
Thank you, Mr. Downs. So there's obviously been, I've raised this issue before, and I'm really grateful for staff for the work that they've been doing around the issue of how we bridge that blue line gap. And more work is being done, and I felt the need to say that today so that people who are listening understand that we're continuing to have conversations and trying to get all the bus routes on a map so that we can kind of begin to look at how they work together and will help people. I think it's important to remember that something like 50 or 60% of the increased ridership comes from people heading west. Mm-hmm. And to cut the southern part of Virginia off and make it really harder for them to go west is not, I don't think, any of our intentions. We want to be able for those folks to be able to, from Alexandria and Crystal City, to be able to get out to Tyson's if that's where their workplace is. So we're continuing to work on that.
Even the district is interested in having some of its residents going west.
Well, you don't have a gap to deal with, though.
Not moving, just working.
Mr. Chairman, I hope they'll have a one seat with when they come in now. Because if you watch the West Falls Church Station, we have a pretty strong reverse commute coming into West Falls Church. Well, those folks now will have a seat from the District of Columbia right into Tyson's Corner. I think it's progress.
That's good for all of us. A suggestion, the earlier conversation that we had about connecting communities as part of the strategic plan. There is a framework here about what the authority does for the region about connecting communities. If you think about the authority being the only entity that can be a convener for this kind of regional alignment of all of these counties and all of these bus services, we're also the only one who can provide a comprehensive trip planner. We're also the only one who can provide a smart trip card framework for fares and fare collection. And that part of the lessons that we learn here can be part of that vision going forward. It doesn't have to be that we have to be operating a new rail segment in order to be able to do this on a regional basis, parts of the region at a time to realign and maximize the interoperability for the customers of the transit services we provide. We are the only place in this region that that can actually happen. Thanks. and we're going to celebrate the new year with Dave Kubicek talking about service outages for the next 6 months.
Sustained improvement.
Sustained. For as far as the eye can see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, good morning, and thank you very much. Time does pass very quickly, so we're back for our six-month kind of update on what's taking place. Go to the first slide, please. Again, this right in here is just to kind of stress what's taking place from a single tracking perspective and also from a, you know, from a major shutdowns. It's just continue to reinforce and also we understand the inconvenience that we do cause to the customers. It is not that we are doing this just because we want to. We are doing this because this is a necessity for us to be able to sustain these type of services. And it's also, as demands and stuff become more and more on this system, it's going to become that much more critical. So one of the things that I would also say that to note on this is that it's multiple efforts. It's NTSB recommendations. It's enhancements from a standpoint of state of good repair. It's a neutral host. There's a lot of other venues. It's not solely just about just the railroad and replacing rail and steel at certain time frames. And with this, we are also, if we could go to the next slide, whenever we kind of do an analysis and stuff of this, going into this like we have done every year, since I've been here, is basically, you know, there are some cardinal time frames where we do not have shutdowns. 4th of July, you know, cherry blossom season, you know, you'll see 3 weeks where, you know, we pretty much allow, we have the railroad open, the inauguration, Christmas, you know, New Year's Eve, you know, Thanksgiving Day. There's areas where we just, like I said, we just simply do not do that. And we, I know that with Veterans Day and some of the other ones, as we migrate ourselves into the next part of the year, we're going to do some further evaluation on the type of work and stuff of what's taking place. But I just wanted also, these pictures are also important to just kind of point out. This is the type of work that's happening on this railroad. Top picture, the tunnel work, everything else. You know, I apologize, but we just simply cannot mobilize and demobilize in 4 hours when you're undertaking structural type work in a tunnel, setting concrete, you know, setting steel and everything else. These are major, major efforts that require time. And then the bottom one is like an inspection of the bridge and everything else. We are stacking as much work as we humanly can. And as you can see, there's some sophisticated equipment and stuff that's taking place that's helping speeding this thing up. But maintaining the integrity of this system is so vitally important. And as we continue to measure our on-time performance and as we look at the reliability of the fleet and everything else, these are very important investments that, you know, that are paying off, but they must continue to be sustained. Next slide, please. Customer outreach, it's a similar forecast, but, just wanted to provide a, for those that hadn't been in the system yet, you've heard, you know, about the signs, you know, on the kiosks. This is the latest deployment of yet, you know, more tools, more resources and stuff for us to get messaging and communications out. I'd also like to add that one of the things that's happened over this last 6 months is I've taken it personally where I've had the opportunity to meet with the head of VDOT. And we're talking and starting to work on what plans that they have for the next year or 2 years out. For example, working with the District of Columbia on New York Avenue and the widening of the bridge and all that effort that they need right there. Some of the outages that are happening on the Red Line in that respective area is tied in, and what we're trying to do is jointly stack the work, because whenever they're pouring their concrete and they are establishing their piers, they need a lot of room and work across the board. And so what the course of action for this next 6 months for me and my staff is, I'm going to go back out and have the meetings with VDOT, and then we're also going to incorporate
a formal meeting with MDOT as well, as well as some of the locals, you know, stakeholders. It's been very, very helpful for us to stack that. And I would also note the other two that are also critical is working with PEPCO and like Dominion and some of our other utility providers. They have major outages. And they have needs where they come to us where they need to shut down the system and work it and stuff. So with us working on the scheduling and stuff, we are trying to maximize, you know, the efficiencies of these outages, as you've seen in some of our other graphs as far as productivity, but it's also for the staking of the work that needs to be done. In the appendix, have you seen beforehand, we state the outages, we're providing the time frames, and I'll be back here wishing everybody a free happy 4th of July about our next, you know, outages and stuff towards the end of the year, and I'm open for questions.
Ms. Porter?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for the outreach that you're conducting to let people know about this. It's very helpful. I get a surprising number of inquiries, people saying we have an event planned for such and such a weekend in the future, and we want to know where the system's going to be shut down that weekend. And I know that we've got a calendar up on our website, but it's apparent to me that people don't know how to access it. So could we just keep mentioning that over and over and over and over again every time we put out information on this, just so people will know that they have a resource where they can look more farther out than just next weekend? I think
absolutely.
That would be helpful.
We'll review that, and I actually had with the Access Committee a meeting that I attended last month. That was one of the things, the same things we brought up, and we asked them, and I asked them several times, I said, if there is another venue that works better than what we've noted and stuff, please, you know, follow up and let us know, but we'll definitely look at that.
I know we put out weekly press releases that say this is what's happening the next week. I can't remember now, but do they say at the bottom, for future information, look here at this link? Do we do that?
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's escaping me, perhaps it's escaping other people too.
Yeah. And I would also say that on meetings like with the Department of Transportation, even though there's various venues, whenever we go and have had these meetings and stuff, it's something that I'm handing to them as well, you know, based off of this, as well as sometimes we're looking at even longer term plans and stuff. And so it's been a good step. It's been, I think, something that I would like to continue to, you know, to nurture. And I appreciate, you know, the support that I'm getting, you know, because everybody has been very responsive and is very interested, especially whenever we get through permitting and, you know, we don't have any incidents and everybody's getting their work simultaneously done, you know, all at the same time, and they're keeping their schedules and everybody's like jurisdiction.
Mr. Downey?
That's my time. I was out on the Orange Line Saturday coming into D.C. with a shutdown. Bus service was superb. Really well handled. And I was really pleased to see some of our folks from here at headquarters out there meeting the customer and helping the customers get along. One other comment, and I know you say in here, you're going to evaluate Veterans Day and other similar occasions. I think it's important. If we take a three-day shutdown, it should be because it's work that absolutely couldn't be done without 3 days. We shouldn't just take 3 one-day shutdowns because they're on the calendar. I can defend it if we can say, here's why we had to do it, here's what we get, but I don't think we should press our luck with people.
Mr. Bolger?
I just wanted to know, Dave, what happens to the real-time train information system when you have a shutdown? Is it operational, or is it to say delay?
Oh, that's such a great topic.
Okay.
The system just simply does not have the ability to adjust and to reprogram itself whenever we're having these outages. And that's why we've been communicating on some of our items going forward that we need to look at the next generation of, you know, passenger information systems and such. There is technology out there that does it without human intervention, and that's the technology of what we're looking to move forward on. And it's just like I said, when the PIDs and some other things were installed, they were state of the art, but they've just run their course, and they can't keep up with the duty cycle of what we're doing now.
Done with the reconstruction by the time the new software comes around, and we won't need it then.
I would say, for a constant state of good repair, we need to get the new PIDs in. Because I think they will, maybe not to the severity level of what we're doing right now, but there needs to be a constant presence. And I would say this much. Everybody talks about eight-car trains, which is great and it's exciting. But we will be doubling the duty cycle of what we're running on these switches and on this rail and everything else. And so that's what I should maybe doubles a little stretching it. But when you start adding capacity, you start, you know, wearing items, you know, that much quicker, and the acceleration rate it becomes much more aggressive. And so that's why when we're looking at some of these major outages, when it gets into tunnel work where we're jackhammering out feet of concrete, pulling out rebar, you know, and setting this stuff, you know, into place and stuff, this is major infrastructure work that we want to get taken care of so that way we can do normal maintenance, you know, normal type of activities, which is a lot more easier for us to conduct.
Follow up, you know, it seems like if we just have delay up on the passenger information displays, you know, that's one thing for our customers. If we could, I don't know, have a metric that says, you know, 30-minute delay or hour delay, you know, it just seems like we're asking our customers to just accept delay and they don't know what that means in time.
If I could, we do post time frames and stuff, but I think also that's why the acceleration and the addition of the signage on the kiosk. So that way the customer is actually informed before you go through the pay area. Then it's the next step is then once you are within the system, then we'll look at that philosophy. One of the things that we'll be looking at and that we're working on is like a wayfinding. It's really a matter of how you approach the system, enter the system, and utilize the system. And I think there's a few more points that probably could be, you know, that could be stressed a little bit and improved upon. But like I said, now we've got at least a tool at the kiosk level that can be done besides announcements and besides whenever you're getting down there. But the ability to localize basically a DOS-based system with a green screen is not as fluid as what we have nowadays.
Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, I'd wish you all Godspeed. And on that note, this concludes the agenda for the Customer Service and Operations Committee. Adjourned. Thank you.